Hello world. Hi everyone. I am Samantha Jones Darling. I'm a two-time author, I'm an authenticity coach, and I'm the creator of the We Explore to Restore Travel Academy, a school for life around the globe, starting right where you are. I'm also the creator of this podcast with the same name, We Explore to Restore, where we talk about travel, wellness, and spirituality. And this season, on my second season of the podcast, we're doing something fun and interesting that I call Three Questions with SJ. I wanted to bring a collaborative experience to my podcast, so I've asked my guests to bring three questions that they want to ask me, and I've come up with three questions that I want to ask them, and we'll answer them back and forth and see what entertainment and enlightenment falls from our lips during the conversation. So today on my show, I have a friend of mine named Owen Hunt. He's the Blue Collar Mystic, and he's a producer, a stand-up comedian who lives in the Atlanta area, and he has his own podcast, The Blue Collar Mystics, which I was a guest on last year. Hey, Owen.
Hey, Samantha. Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you so much for giving us your time. I know how busy you are, so thanks for carving out some time for us to have a good chat and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm just, like I said, I'm ecstatic to be here. It's great to catch back up with you.
It is fun. It's been about 6 months since we've spoken.
Yeah, it's been a while. You've been busy too. I've been seeing a lot of your posts and really excited. Congratulations on the new book.
Thank you. Yes. For those of you who don't know, I just mentioned I'm a two-time author. And last year I published two different books. The first one being The Sunset on Malibu, which is what I talked about when I was on Owen's show. And the second one, my newest baby, Flatter to Lightness, Be the Author of Your Own Story. We Explore to Restore. There's a little bit of a theme happening here, everybody. Okay, so Owen, we're going to do three questions with SJ. Do you want to just go first or do you want me to go first?
I will defer to you.
Excellent. Okay. All right. You know what? It's so funny. Out of all the podcasts that I've done, only two people have asked me to go first. Everybody else has been like, oh, I want to go. That's so interesting. Okay, so, well, you know what, this is actually not one of the questions, but I'm going to ask you this right now. Where did the name Bootsy Greenwood come from?
Oh, that's my stripper name.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. For anybody who doesn't know, if you take the first pet that you had, and then the street you grew up on, then that is like your stripper name. It's like your alter ego or whatever. And so that is mine. And I thought it had a great ring to it. Also, my name being Owen Hunt. There's a show called Grey's Anatomy. Are you familiar with it? And there's a character on that show named Owen Hunt. So it's been a problem for me as far as like Google and stuff. So, so having Bootsy Greenwood as my, you know, as my alter ego name sort of thing has helped me a lot. Just like people can find me a little bit easier. So if you're looking for me on social media, that's my handle on all the different platforms and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that, with my name being Samantha Jones, and she was a very popular character on Sex and the City, and almost every single time I meet somebody new, they're like, oh, Sex and the City, I'm like, yeah, and it's great, because people remember me, you know, immediately, which is nice, but to be honest, I had to do the same thing with my name, Samantha Jones, and I added the darling, and how that happened was, I was on the plane moving from Indonesia to London, and I was trying to figure out what could I do. And I wanted Samantha Jones author, but it was already taken. Samantha Jones writer was already taken. And Samantha Jones author, I couldn't use yet because I wasn't published. And so I was like, what should I do? And then I was like, oh, Samantha Jones darling. And I just put that up there. And then my editor liked it so much. We made it my pen name. And now it's like everything. And I just took it.
It's awesome. Yeah, we have to create our own characters. Sometimes I think that's part of the expression, and we can have fun with that. You know, that's part of the thing. For you and I, we had a little bit of a catalyst for it, but I encourage anybody to play around. You know, we get our names kind of as a gift, and I think there's something to that. But I think also thinking outside of the box and defining who we are and taking responsibility for how we present ourselves. It's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. So people call me Bootsy. I have best friends who call me Bootsy, and some people call me Owen. I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter to me, but it is fun. And
Oh, well, I'm switching to Bootsy. That's it. I'm calling you Bootsy.
It happens. It happens a lot of times. I had somebody who was like, well, it sounds more like we're flirting if I call you Bootsy. So we'll just go with that, you know? So I'm like, all right, well, that's fine. Whatever floats your boat. It's all good. I love it.
Okay. Now here's the real question. Here's the real question. I want to know, tell me about the first time, because you're a stand-up comedian and I've seen you all the time in your posts doing different shows. And it got me thinking about, what was it like the first time that you stepped on stage to step into this new character, as you say, to speak and try to make people laugh? Like, were you scared? And if you were, how did you deal with that fear?
Yeah, in a word, I would say probably awkward would pretty much cover it. And yeah, I was definitely scared. I was definitely nervous. I had a lot of friends there to support me. I was fortunate enough that I didn't just wing it. You know, I had a little bit of time to prepare. I had a whole month to prepare because I wanted to do it for my 36th birthday, which was in July of 18. So I did it because, like, what else are you going to get for your 36th birthday? Like a bunch of shame and fear and stage fright. You know, it's been a crazy time since then. I didn't know that I would wind up actually pursuing it. It was just something that I wanted to try. And I was definitely nervous, definitely scared. I did okay. Like the first part was okay. And then I just started forgetting stuff. And it's been really an interesting and revelatory part of my journey, spiritually and otherwise. I get to learn a lot about other people psychologically and a lot about myself. One of the biggest advantages to doing stand-up comedy for me is it's very confronting and it makes me be honest, which is, you know, if you're a toxic positive tendency, which kind of I could fall into that category, then it can be very I think that can be problematic. You know, you might compartmentalize some things and not be entirely honest with yourself. Well, comedy will kind of force you to. And I was compartmentalized too when I first started, because I kind of saw comedy as this sort of world over here, and then spirituality as this world over here. And it's like doing that is departitioning the hard drives. You know, you want to kind of wire things together and start to be more authentic and truly express who we are. So I don't think I necessarily expressed 100% who I was, but that's the funny thing about it too. There's a lot that goes into that, doing something for the first time. There's a little bit of beginner's luck. There's a little bit of attitude. You don't know how bad you might be. There's like I said, there's a lot that goes into that and just learning in general. But for me, it was a lot of nerves. It was a lot of fear. And I had been on stage before, so I thought it was going to be a lot easier than what it was, honestly. I played in bands and things like that in college. So I thought it would be much easier. But it was a lot different to be on stage with just a microphone and a bunch of people like, what do you got?
Yeah.
What is it? What make me laugh, bro?
I totally know that feeling too, because as a writer, I had to do the same thing and confront the darkness of my experience, right? Because one of the things that I wanted to do, being inspired by other writers who were very authentic and very real and very expose, you know, of their experience, I wanted to follow in that same vein. And I wanted to tell the truth to myself first, you know, and write the truth for me and then share it with the world. And I remember when I had, you know, at my book launch, I was reading these words out loud in front of, you know, just sitting there, just me and my words in front of, thank goodness, a room full of people who loved me like you had, right? I had support. But the difference between writing it for yourself and then publishing it is one level, right? Writing for yourself is one level, then publishing it is another. And then standing up in front of a crowd in public, speaking them, that's a whole nother level. You know what I mean? And each time we like get closer to our words and closer to our healing and more empowered and more confident in what we've experienced and what we want to share.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think that's definitely, we've had some similar insights into the process, which is cool.
Yeah.
So is it my turn to ask you a question now?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So mine is kind of along those same similar lines. I want to unpack the process of writing a book for the first time. It's something I've thought about for a long time, and I have yet to do yet to finish. At least I've kind of dabbled and messed around a little bit. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear about your approach and how you kept yourself specifically focused on what you were trying to communicate and how to get that down on paper. Mm-hmm. And finally, you know, to your editor, you know, what is mm-hmm. What does that look like? And how did you stay motivated, and especially doing it for the first time? Mm-hmm. How did you say, like, how did you face the criticism a little bit as well? I would love to hear
a little bit about that. Oh, that's a great question. Well, you know, and let me start off by saying that every writer, every artist, we come to these things in their own way. You know what I mean? So how I did it is how I did it. And, you know, and hopefully I can offer some support and insight here, but I'm just saying and I just want to preface it by how I did it is not the only way. But, you know, I didn't start writing until 2017. And I actually had a desire to write and a massive desire to write, but could not access my own thoughts or feelings to write them on a page. And I was connected to it through, I actually hired a health coach to help me with my relationship to food. And one of the things that the very first thing that she had me do was to keep a food journal. And the task was to write down everything you eat in a day, right? That's super simple. But the catalyst was that not only was I meant to write down what I ate, but I was meant to write down how I felt before I ate and after I ate. Did I feel tired? Did I feel anxious? Did I feel full? Did I feel sad, happy? Any kind of feeling at all, I was meant to write down. And so before that, I was unable to connect to my own emotions in a structured way like that because I had never had such a specific question to answer. And so that process of keeping that food journal with how I felt connected me to my thoughts and feelings 4 or 5 times a day, you know, and then after I connected to it and realized that I was like, oh, this is how I understand myself. This is how I can communicate with myself. This is how I can understand how I feel. Once that happened, I never put my pen down again. You know what I mean? Like never. It just opened up this floodgate. And so, and then honestly, about 2 weeks after that, I was writing and I heard myself speak, and I'm a self-projected projector. And for those of you who don't know what that means is, my voice is where my gut instinct lives. And so I will just hear myself say things, and that's my internal guide self-projecting me into what is next. And I heard myself say, oh, I think I'm writing a book. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds pretty good, you know? And so I started, you know, like writing ideas, and I was just coming out of treatment, which is what The Sunset of Malibu is about. And it made sense to write down what happened and get clear on that. And so I started writing it, and I hired a book coach because I love learning, and I love learning in a one-on-one experience. And she was a book coach and an editor and somebody who had already written as well. She had lots of experience, and she brought me emotional support. And she also told me one of the most important things that I have never heard from another editor. I've only heard this from her, is write it all down and we'll sort it out at the end. And that gave me the permission to just write what I needed to write what I needed to feel, write what I needed to get clear on. And then the more she encouraged me to do what felt right for me, to be authentic to myself, to be connected to myself, the easier it got and the less work that she had to do editing, because it was exactly what I wanted to say because she gave me that permission. And I'm actually in a couple of writing groups on Facebook where I see people that are still struggling with this, because there's a lot of people who are still creating to please the audience. And I comment things from a different way. I create to please myself, and then I share it with you. And if you like it, great. And if you don't, then you can buy a different book. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I think that also matters in which way you want to go, because if you're creating for yourself, then it's, you know, that's one thing. And if you're creating to be a bestseller, that's another ballgame, right? These are two different experiences. And so, you know, I actually went through the process with that first editor. and wrote an entire manuscript and got all the way to the end, went through the publishing process, it was two days before the book was going to go live. And I, for the 2 weeks leading up to it, my body was filling with all this anxiety, and I pulled the project because it wasn't right. And it was crazy because I'd done all this marketing and I told everybody I did this book and here's the cover and you're going to buy it. And then I had to pull the whole thing. And then I had to sit there and deal with the shame, the embarrassment. And I didn't actually feel shame or embarrassment, but I knew other people felt it on my behalf. And so I had to deal with that, and pull it back. And then had to walk through that density when I published the second book a year later that had a lot of words that was from the first draft. But I needed to pull back and write, because the first edition, or the first manuscript, it was writing to heal. And then the book that I ended up publishing was the book that I wrote to share. And so that was my journey, because I write to heal, I write to connect. And then each story that's in there has been written 3 or 4 or even 5 times as I go through the layers. And each time that I grow as a person, the way that I write the story grows and changes too. And so that part can hitch people up, because if you are a perfectionist or something like that, we can get sometimes oh, well, it's not good enough, I don't feel like that anymore. But, Leonardo, I almost said Leonardo DiCaprio, Leonardo da Vinci says that good art is never finished, And the guy that helped me publish these books, the day after I published it, I called him up. I was like, why would you let me publish this? He said, every writer does this. I was like, it's not done. I have to say this. He said, no, it's done. He was like, just if you have more to say, we'll write another book, and we get So giving yourself the freedom to create what works for your heart and your soul and what you actually want to express to the world. And the best advice that I ever got from the very beginning, which you didn't ask me, but I'll tell you now, is the thing you're afraid to write, write that.
Yeah, that's no different than comedy, for sure. 100%. Mm-hmm. Seems like, very similar things to deal with. You've got that, what is it called? Imposter syndrome attack right mm-hmm. after, right, mm-hmm.
Immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course that makes so much sense. I mean, that's that subconscious being like, I'm not comfortable. Mm-hmm. But that's a good thing. I think imposter syndrome is great. I mean, you won't hear that take often, but I do. I mean, it keeps you working. If you think that you're so good, then you're going to eat. Yeah. I don't want to be cursory here, but you will have a wake-up call from that. I've learned that from nature mostly, mm-hmm. Well, balance will be restored.
Anything like that, like imposter syndrome, you can with any challenge, you can allow it to overtake you, or you can flip it and use it to fuel you. You can use that fire of fear and use it for passion, to create.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it'll help you in the long run. It's mm-hmm. pain now or pain later, basically, mm-hmm. And I think the trade-off is way worth it to just as often as you can, you're not going to be able to always do it, but as often as you can, just get through that.
Yeah.
That resistance.
Yeah. And, I want to mention one more thing, because you asked about how did I keep going? And to be honest, it was hard. But the fire for me inside to finish was so powerful that I couldn't not finish. I couldn't. But there were days where it was hard, but I got into the flow of it. And I say all those words to say that there was a moment where I had written a lot and was almost complete. And I had to stop writing and put it aside for 3 months and then come back to it. And sure. I want to encourage anyone creating anything to give yourself a moment to pause and rest and integrate and recalibrate, because when you have all those words inside you, or you have those ideas or thoughts, and you put them out onto a page or onto a canvas or any whatever your creation is, you are now a different person. The words are not inside you wondering what to be anymore. Now they have been born, and you are now without that. Right. And so you need to integrate that into the person who has created this thing. It's almost like birthing. It's almost motherhood in some respects.
Yeah.
And so give yourself a break. Let the words just sit there. Give them a minute and you will know when it's time to come back and look at them again and really be like, okay, now I'm ready. Now we're ready. Let's do this.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Yeah, I mean, it's just keeping it forward. I used to joke and riff with one of my buddies and I'd be like, you know what? Let's just give up. And then we just start howling laughing because it's like, that's really not an option. I'd like, I'll give up and then in 10 minutes, I'll be bored. I'll need something to do. And, you know, I don't recommend going to just pushing a rock up the hill for no reason, but you know, it's a thing that's kind of funny. And if you'll disengage like that and even think about it, one of the best pieces of advice I got was from my mom. She was like, you know, you can always quit. You know, I don't know what it was. She probably wanted me to quit. It was probably football. And she was like, I want him to quit. I don't want him to hurt himself or whatever. Right. But she would say that. And it's true. It's like, I tried scuba diving. I thought I would love it. I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life like teaching people to scuba. I hated it. But you don't know until you try it. You know, I came up, my nose all bloody. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
You know, I'm like, this is terrible. I don't like feeling claustrophobic, you know, and it's weird down there. But I didn't know that. And you wouldn't know that unless you get out there and get, it's kind of cliche, right? You don't know until you try, but it's a cliche. It's true for a reason, you know, it's cliche because it's an observable pattern. You
know? Exactly. Is it my turn to ask something or is it yours?
I think it's your, I it think is. It's your turn to ask me now.
It's my turn. Okay. Okay. It's no secret that laughter is a fantastic medicine to a healthy soul and body, right? What or who brings the most laughter into your life and who's the funniest person you know?
Oh gosh. I know so many funny people. It's really hard to say. Yeah. I have two of my buddies who are so funny and there's countless people that I've met who are insanely funny, like just unbelievably funny. And most of them don't do stand up or any sort of artistic expression with comedy. They're just naturally funny and their brain works that way. The funniest person I know. I mean, if you would ask me that, it depends on the day. I would have to say a little bit because I get just like everybody else, you know, around certain people and hearing what they have to say. Yeah, it's really hard to say. But
do you laugh every day?
Absolutely. Yeah. On a day-to-day basis, my mom and I probably laugh the most just because I just goof around with her and we're very, you know, we're comfortable around each other. And then I work with her. We have another business that I work with her on. It's just a cleaning business and we do Airbnb and stuff. So mostly, you know, she's the source of most of my laughter, just us, you know, goofing around back and forth on the phone or in the office or wherever, you know, we used to do cleaning back in the day. And, I mean, I've done all kinds of terrible, heinous, you know, talk about bong water and all kinds of stuff, right? Where it's just disgusting. We did Panama City one year after spring break. We did that clean.
Ooh.
It was horrible. So the things that we've seen, there's tons of references and every day business, there's something new to talk about or think about or whatever. Yeah. So a lot of times that leads directly to a laughter. Sometimes it leads directly to stress and pain, but very often stress and pain ultimately winds up in laughter and resolving the tension. You know, we both have very good sense of humor. And there's something about family too, whether it's music or comedy or whatever, you have these tastes that are sort of pre-programmed. Like if I go to someone else's house, their family will have a different sort of style of comedy, if you will, than another group, another family will see certain other things as humorous or what have you. But yeah, the majority of my laughs, that's how they come. And my mom's funny. She's not the funniest person that I know, but she's funny. She's got a great sense of humor. She grew up watching Saturday Night Live and we are a very artistic and creative family, mostly musically, but a lot of admiration and adoration for comedians my entire life. I got two friends of mine who are probably the funniest guys that I know. They're hilarious. My friend Will, who's I shouldn't say he's my barber right now. He'd be like, what? No, I'm not claiming that, homie. You know, he'll just roast me to get in his chair. You know what I'm saying? Like, but he's so funny. And the shop that he works in, I know he keeps him laughing all day. Every time I go in there, you know, the place is just roaring. And then my friend Tommy, who lives in Atlanta, those two guys and I, we're friends. We get together every once in a while and cook out or go hiking or whatever. And, they're so funny. You know, they appreciate a lot of the same things that I think are funny types of humor and memes and stuff. That's kind of niche, but we laugh a lot. Those two guys are hilarious. My friend Junior Mojica as well, who lives in, I believe he used to be up in Northern California, but I believe he's in LA now, but he was in Sacramento, and years ago, we used to work Coachella a lot together. Mm-hmm. And gosh, man, that guy would crack me up the entire, he was so funny, just insanely funny. One of the funniest people you've ever met. And then, my friend Terry Myers, also really funny. He lives here in Atlanta. I've done comedy with him.
So what kind of style is your kind of funny?
Well, that's a good question. that I like a lot of different styles of humor. I really do. I like slapstick. I like intellectual humor. I like dark humor. Some people don't really jive with that. Now, as far as the type of humor that I like and the type of humor that I do, they're a little bit different for sure, because I'm mixing something intentionally to try to bring that to an audience and try to add a little bit of inspiration in the comedy. I'm certainly sarcastic and a little bit, you know, but I'm overall optimistic and sort of jolly in my comedy, but I also really enjoy dark, you know, biting comedy, intellectual comedy. I have a very wide range of tastes when it comes to even political comedy, and a lot of the political comedy that I like is stuff that you can't even do in a room, even my own. Like, I have a hard time honestly sharing my own perspective because I'm scared people are going to judge me, you know. And in fact, I'm writing a bit about that. It's talking about like confronting and you know, that honesty that comes with writing. That's a very true statement for me. I'm almost afraid to open up because I'm afraid if I open up, then people will pull away from me when I tell them how I view the world, even though probably seven times out of ten, they'll be like, oh, thank God he said it. He said the thing that nobody wants to say and nobody will say. But there are consequences for that as well. Saying those things, you know, you might not get booked anymore. There are consequences, right? Like, there are cabals of comedians who run this scene or that scene or whatever. And you know, I'm not saying I'm a conspiracy theorist or anything, but people do conspire. That's exactly what's going on. They're like, who should we book or this or that? And, you know, people have been discriminant towards other people in all industries at all points in time. There's tons of politics to navigate as well. So I really try and keep my humor positive. And as much as I can, I want people to be inspired. I want to bring some levity to the situation, even though I could come in and just wreck. But like, for instance, like I did a set at the Grimerica retreat in Mount Shasta that was last month ago. And it was totally different than anything that you would see me do in a normal room. Cause normal room is full of, I don't want to say NPCs. I'm not trying to, you know, dehumanize anybody, but you know, just the standard status quo thought, right? And so that requires a different approach. It's kind of like what you're talking about with your book. It's like, I write to heal and for myself, that's one thing, and then writing for other people, that's something completely different. So the same is true for me, but I do believe that those can come together, and that, I think that's a really big part of that creative process that really that really can give you your voice, because you can see their perspective and you also see your perspective, and you're bringing those together. So it's a development type of thing, but you know, I say blue collar mystic because I think it's a good enough mix. If somebody asks me, a lot of comics would say, what's your mix? You know, like, what are the two opposing things? What are the poles that you're playing with? And for me, you know, spirituality a little bit, and also, you know, frustration.
Can you tell us a short bit from one of your acts?
Well, I've been, sure, I'll do one that your audience might like. Sure. So I'm a libertarian I don't do this one often, but I'll do it on your podcast because I don't feel like I'm going to catch any flack from you. I'm a libertarian, which is kind of like being a conscientious objector at a sex party. Like, I'm not going to stop you guys, but I want to point out that there may be some consequences here, you know? Like, I can see interest rates flying, you know, there's inflation all over the couch. It is a mess in here. We're going to have to clean this thing up. And I'm not going to try and stop anybody, but I will ruin the vibe. It's something I'm working on just as far as like, you know, a perspective kind of thing. Yeah. People know libertarians. It's like, we're very passive. I'm not trying to, you know, tell anybody how to live their life. In fact, quite the opposite. But I will point out that you might be making a mess here. You know, you may be getting a little too.
I was sitting at Starbucks a couple weeks ago, and I'm living in New Orleans now, and I just got here, and I was at the Starbucks, and this politician came up to me, and she was like, "Are you registered to vote?" And I was like, "What?" And she was like, "Are you registered to vote?" And she's like, "No, I just moved here. I haven't, you know." And she was like, "Okay, well, you do this, this, and this, you know, give me instructions." She was like, and then she was like, "You need to register to vote." And she was like, "You can be part of this party or that party." She's like, and then there's some kind of dumb party called the Libertarian Party. She's like, "I'm not even sure if they have candidates. They don't do anything."
That's pretty accurate.
And I thought that was hilarious. And like, honestly, I have not watched the news or politics since 2017. So I have no idea what about any of that. I have found that what the information that I need finds its way to me without me having to filter through all that fear and darkness that they put on television. And I feel very happy and proud of myself to be able to say that I have not watched the news since 2017, and I don't care at all. Yeah. And when people ask me who I vote for, I'm like, you know what I vote for? I vote for everybody to stop giving their power away. That's what I vote for.
100%. Yeah. If nobody voted, what would happen then? That's what we need to do. We need to just not go. Like, you can't validate. You can't be like,
all.
Exactly. Zero votes. Yeah. You can't count that. There's no majority. You can't claim that you won anything legitimately. You know,
how about we can all just go to Walmart and buy what we need and go to restaurants and everybody just chill out. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Take care of yourself. Worry about you. Worry about your family.
Empty the schools. Teachers will show up. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
To be honest, that's what I thought. I feel that a good bit of the pandemic was meant to do that, right? It was meant to do that, but we all held on so tightly to all our fear, to all our old systems, and to what we knew to be, you know, effective. And we just held on and held on. And I think that we would have done a lot better if we had let go even more than we did.
Right on. Yeah, it was a wild time. I was very turned around and confused, and I didn't give anybody any solid, like, this is what I think is, or make any predictions or anything, because I had no idea. It was just a complete, complete upside down. Like, I was just super uncertain, which that's the nature of reality anyway. Nothing's certain. So
that's
I'm
for sure.
proud of you for not paying attention to the media. That's another thing that I have try to implement as much as possible. Whether it's CNN, Fox News, NPR, you know, some people think that just because they listen to a certain type of news that they're in the know, but it's like, they all have their agendas. And to me, NPR is like the most insidious form of propaganda, because it's so boring that you have to believe it.
That's funny. It's so boring you have to believe it. We should make a t-shirt that says that.
It is. It's like listening to paint dry. My God.
That's funny. Well, you know, a part of it too was because I, you know, am on my path to myself. You know, what I realized was I had been filled with so many opinions and ideas that came from the outside world. And when I did start writing, you know, I found, you know, I that was the very beginning of me cultivating a relationship between me and myself and me and my voice. And I immediately took stock of how many voices that I had been listening to for my entire life, you know? And I was like, you know what? I think I need to stop I just need to cut it all out, you know, similar to going to treatment and cutting out all the alcohol for however many months you need to do that, or cutting out the drugs and going through a fasting and then being able to decide with discernment what you want to add back in.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's really smart. I've seen that work in a lot of different sort of ways, even up to and including like diet, right? Like you take everything down to the basics, and then you start adding things back. What's good? What's not? And that's one of the things that I did too with really all media, even music, where I was very intentional. I did like a week long fast of YouTube and reading and all that from The Artist's Way. And that was the scariest part of that book to me, was like, oh my God, what am I going to do without content? And I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's just content. Like, why do you need to fill yourself with content when it can come directly out of you? Right. And it's a balance, you know, we enjoy it, but, it made a huge, huge impact on me and made me way more intentional about what I watched, what I consumed, what I listened to, what I read, everything. Because there's not enough time to consume it all anyway. So you have to pick. And so when you start picking with intention instead of just getting, you know, pulled
instead
around,
of letting the algorithm pick for you.
Exactly. Yeah. It changes things. And then you have that space to cultivate with your own creativity as well.
Yeah.
That's important to nurture.
Well, you know, I have to mention, because this book that I just came out with, Ladder to Lightness, that way, there is in the third section, it's called Nourish, all about discernment. And what this book is a combination of storytelling and then coaching, where I tell people, like, this is why I think this is important. And then it goes into experiments, actionable steps that people can try to learn the lessons in their own life, in their own way, and choose which thing works for them. And I bring that up because it's what you were just talking about. And it talks about, you know, being discerning about what we nourish our bodies with, food wise, our physical body and our spiritual and emotional body, right? What, like just what you were saying, what music are we listening to? What people are we spending time with? What places are we putting ourselves into? You know, like, are we spending any time in nature, or are we all inside boxes, right? All the time. Are we putting our feet on the ground barefoot, or are we always wearing a sneaker? You know, what are the words of the music saying, right? What are we singing when we're singing in the car? All of these things matter greatly to our existence. And so part of what I suggest that people do is, like you just said, to clear it all out, just let everything go with the cleanse, you know, and then choose with discernment what to put back in. I love that.
Yeah, it's great. People have been doing it for a long time. You know, they've been going out into the wilderness for a vision quest or what have you. Fill in the blank.
Yeah. And I will say that the stories in this book are mine, right? But the principles in here are not a secret, and they don't cost any money at all. Why this book costs money is because I've made it into a beautiful experience that's super efficient and super simple and easy to follow, right? But nothing in here, every healing modality in there is free and built into our human experience for us all to have.
Yeah. And there's a lot of different, I think people just need to find what works for them. I've been really fortunate to meet a lot of really talented people who are, have all kinds of different tools and skills and things like that. So I totally get it.
Yeah. Yep. I think you're up.
It's my turn. Yeah. I wanted to ask, because you've had such incredible and interesting travels.
Yes.
Especially, you know, out of the country and all that stuff. I would love to know what that taught you. What did you pick up? What was, you know, give a couple of lessons. You know, it doesn't have to be the most important one. I don't want to put you on the spot that much, but a lesson or two, like, what do you think the most important things that you've gleaned from your travels have been?
That's very good. Well, let's see. One of the main things that I learned is about, like, I went too fast in the beginning. I went fast, and I was living my life in a way that I had seen on television, you know, and seen in movies. And I was like mimicking what I had seen, because at that point I didn't know how to listen to my own internal notifications. And so the process of traveling by myself, at first I was like following in the footsteps of my mentors and my idols, you know, and people that I knew, that had traveled. And to be honest, most of them were men. And that was, you know, that was what I did, right? But as almost immediately, I started being like, you know what? I don't think I like that way. I'm not going to go that. I would set up all these things. And I was like, I don't even want to do that. Why did I set that up for myself? And I was like, just doing what everybody else did. And there's this great story that I tell this isn't even published. It's a good story. I went to Cambodia. I was in Thailand and I wanted to go to Cambodia and I flew there all by myself. And that was really scary to be in another country and fly into another country. And I was by myself this whole time. And so, you know, like dealing with the passports and visas and things like that. And I get to Cambodia. And I had this tour set up. And I go on a tour with this guy. And he has been doing this tour for like 15 years and going to Angkor Wat, right? This massively beautiful, impactful, spiritual place, right? And it's the, you know, there's all kinds of reasons why people want to go there. I didn't even know why I wanted to go there, except that somebody told me I should go there, right? And that's why I went. And so I go and he picks me up in the morning and we go to this thing and we're walking around and I'm like, okay, this is good. But like, I don't really get this. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care about this. And we're walking around and we had this whole day planned and I'm just getting more tired and more tired and more distraught. And there's so many people everywhere and standing in lines and tickets and all this funneling of go this way and go that way. And it felt very restrictive. And I was like, oh gosh. And so I took a break and I sat there for a minute. And honestly, I had a beer, even though it was super early in the morning because it was the only cold beverage that they had to offer. It was so hot. And I had a beer and I heard these monks singing. And so I got up and went to explore by myself and walked through this like graveyard kind of thing, was like sneaking around and then like looked over and saw all these young monks just sitting there singing in their meditation. And I don't know if they saw me or not, but I just sat there and listened to them sing. And I was like, connecting to me exploring on my own and going my own way and finding something that pleased me. And I was like, oh, ding, ding. And so I get back in the car with my tour guide and I said, I'm not happy. And he was like, oh my God, what? And I was like, no, not with you. I said, I don't want to go any more places that you have to buy a ticket or stand in line for. I said, I want you to show me around this town. I was in Siem Reap. I was like, I want you to show me around, but I don't want to go where anybody else has gone. I was like, what can we do? I was like, are there people's houses? Are there places? Like, what can you show me? And he started to cry. And he was like, Samantha, I have been waiting for this day for 15 years. I have been doing the same tour every single day, over and over and over again. And nobody has ever asked me this. I'm so excited. Do you like to ride horses? And I was like, yeah, I do. He was like, let's go ride horses. I was like, yes, let's do it. And so we start going through the town. And then there's this elephant that walks across the street. You know what I mean? And then we find this temple that is brand new that he's never even seen before. And this is his hometown where he lives. And there's nobody in the temple. And I get out and I explore and I take pictures and I pray and I dance. And then there's more monks singing and my whole body's flooded with goosebumps right now, you know? And then we ended up not horseback riding because his friends were not home, but I had the most amazing day because I went off the grid, right? I went out of the line. I was like, no, I don't want any of that. And I'm so glad I got to experience that so early on in my travels because it immediately shifted. And so like, you know, people would, when I was living in Bali, people would call and be like, what should I do? I'm like, just get here and follow your nose. That's what you should do. I'm like, I could show you places to stay. I could show you places to eat, but I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm not going to write a guide on how to do Bali. I'm not going to give you the 10 steps of what the best thing to do is here. What I'm going to do is empower you to think and feel for yourself and just get out there and explore.
Yeah, I love that. I think there's something to that too, especially with you being by yourself. That was some realization that I had not too long. I've done some traveling myself by myself, but I think I made this realization in a dream where it was like, anytime I'm exploring in a dream, there's not a group with me. I'm on my own and it's me there.
Yeah.
And that was something to take away. It's like, this is my experience. And I, you know, you feel a lot more comfortable in a group. We've all been kind of pushed to be a little bit more insulated over the past few years, couple of years. Mm-hmm. And you see that, but there's insight there too, to be able to have your own experience, yeah. Use yourself.
Yeah.
See the things that are important to you to learn. And then when you share it with like that guy, and then he's like, you know what? Nobody's ever asked me. Like, that's powerful. That's great.
Yeah. And it made both of our days, you know what I mean? And neither one of us will ever forget that, you know? And the other thing too, is that you were just saying that we're more comfortable in groups. That's not actually true for everybody. There's about 30% of the world who is designed to be independent and not to travel in groups. And I'm one of those. And I was terrified of being alone, which is why I went alone. I went intentionally to confront the fear of loneliness, to confront the Achilles heel that I always had to have somebody take me somewhere or do something, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to go do this by myself. And I learned so much by immersing myself into myself, you know, on days where I felt tired. I didn't have anybody to give me any shade about taking a rest. I didn't have anybody to give me any shade about canceling or rescheduling or anything like that. And, you know, to be honest, the second thing I would say is what I learned is to go slower and do fewer things and take, you know what I mean? Do fewer things and be in them longer, you know, because one of the things that we do, especially as Americans, we're so intent on what's next, what's next, what's next, that we don't even give ourselves time to digest what we have just experienced, what we have just tasted, what we have just nourished ourselves with. We're at breakfast talking about what we're gonna have for lunch. We're at lunch talking about what we're gonna have for dinner. We're at Thanksgiving talking about what's at Christmas, right? We're at Easter talking about summer camp. We need to be more present in our moments. And to do that, we must go slower and to be more present in yourself, to give yourself time to be alone in experiences and see what comes from within that you didn't know was there. Because those, like when any time that somebody was like, oh, do you want to go to this place? Even if I didn't really care to go there, I always said yes, because you never, ever know what magical thing is going to be waiting for you in this new place. And that's literally where we explore to restore, my brand name comes from, is by saying yes to things, exploring yourself and the world around you with the intent to restore.
Yep, that's great. You're kind of messing up my last question, but that's all right. We're
sorry. That's all right. Well, I think it's my turn anyway.
It is.
Okay, let's see. Ooh. Oh, here's a good one. What have you given up doing for others in the name of self-love?
Mostly a lot of coaching. Mm. You know, I had to. I had a kind of a reading with a friend, my friend Janine. She's amazing, super duper talented, and really involved in the dream circles and stuff like that. But she has talents that are kind of difficult to explain. But anyway, I had a session with her and it was very insightful and it really showed me, she was like, you need to take care of you first. Mm-hmm. And so in the morning, I do my morning pages and I do take that time. And one of the things that's happened as a result of that, I guess it's hard sometimes for us to see our own progress, but one of the things that's happened is I've felt like, I don't want to say like super proud of myself, but I've felt like a part of myself.
Why not? You can be super proud.
Is grateful and thankful for taking the time to connect. Right. So one, mm-hmm. and one of the ways that I know that is that I was doing it when I was working with her, I was doing a lot of integrative work and shamanic kind of stuff. And I would have mm-hmm. dreams, weird dreams, and then start to learn to interpret dreams and stuff like that. So, you know, one of the dreams that I had, I was going into this like murky lake and picking up all these body parts, which are me, right? Like you kind of a little insight into dream interpretation. Pretty much everyone is you in the dream. All right. That's one way to look at it. And mm-hmm. it's fine. There's probably many others, but for me,
everyone everywhere is you.
Right. It already is that, but mm-hmm. especially in the dream sense, right? You can take a lot of insight from that. And so I was picking up these body parts out of there, which are certainly me. And then a couple of days later, I had another dream where I was babysitting my parents' kids, which are obviously both me. And so I remember, you know, having a lot of fun and playing. And the little girl in the dream, which would be the heart, right? Like resemblant of the feminine, came mm-hmm. up and just gave me like the biggest hug. in a dream, you know, like, so to me, I took that as a sign to say, thank you. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for, you know, putting the effort in to see me, myself. And I still have tons of room to grow and a lot to learn and all of those things, but it's not going to happen if we don't put the work in and just give ourselves the time to love ourselves. You know, you're not going to get to that next place without it. You know, there's lots of different ways to motivate. There's lots of different angles and perspectives and ways to kind of be critical and improve and those types of things. But we also have to give ourselves a little bit of appreciation, gratitude for putting, for when we do put that time in, because that, that positivity is the snowball that starts rolling.
Yes. And I actually want to go back to your previous question. One of the things I learned in I took myself to Costa Rica, right? And it went like this. My inner self was like, hey, let's go to Costa Rica and hang out. You know, it'll be fun. We'll do this, we'll do that. And then that was my feminine, right? She was like, hey, let's do this. And then my masculine was like, oh my God, yes, I'll bring my computer and we'll work and we'll write it. And she was like, are you okay? You know what I mean? And so I go to Costa Rica and I was there for months and months and months. And it was very challenging. It was because I wasn't surrendering to why I was there, right? And I kept trying to force the work and force this progress and force my masculine, you know, just, I was just forcing. And then finally I was like, as you said, I was like, I give up. That's it. I don't care. Whatever. And then I heard my, you know, and I was like swimming in the pool and I was like enjoying finally after being there. And then my inner feminine was like, thank you. She was like, this is why I invited you here. She was like, we needed to rest. We needed to play. And you screwed up from the get-go. And I was like, you know what? You're right. I'm so sorry. And from that moment on, I just indulged myself. I got massages. I upgraded my where I was staying. You know what I mean? And I watched the sunsets and I started going out to eat and, you know, doing what you're meant to do when you go on a holiday, which is, you know, fill yourself up with things you don't normally do, not take your computer. And so I talk about like taking yourself on honeymoons, you know, regularly to do things like that. And the reason why that triggered it was because I realized in that moment that I had been taking myself for granted. I had not been thanking myself for the things that I was doing, for all the work I'd been doing. And that was what my inner feminine was trying to do, was to take me on this trip to, you know, thank me and say, you deserve all these nice things. And I couldn't see it at first, but then I did.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I mean, if we're not careful, we'll yank ourselves around and be the dictator. You know what I mean? We'll be the tyrant. We'll be our own tyrant if we're not careful. Yeah. You know, it's a balance, but
it is.
You gotta watch that.
For sure. Well, I think we're just about out of time. Do we have one more for me?
Yeah, I have one more question for you, which is, can you talk about what we explore to restore? What are we restoring and how does that process unfold?
Yeah, I can. And I, as you all know, I alluded to it a moment ago, but you know, the exploration is about exploring ourselves through however that means, right? And that's where the We Explore Restore Travel Academy came, because a lot of people were asking me like, you know, that same question, like, what did I learn when I was on the road? And to be honest, the things that I learned did not come from my travel experiences. They came from my moments alone when I wasn't doing anything. And that self-exploration, right? And then the restoration, where does that come from? That idea came from when I was, you know, first going into this journey. I have like a before and after, right? The beginning of my after was when I went to treatment. And the metaphor that came into my mind as a writer and a storyteller, you know, was basically that, you know, our body is our house, right? And I had my soul lived in this house and it had been destroyed over the years by outside forces, right? And some of them were not intentionally mean, but right. But like your mom's like, here's this thing, right? And you in your internal kitchen is blue, right? And you're a kid, what are you gonna do? The kitchen's blue, there's something you could do, right? And that's not mean, but there it is, right? Or, you know, you get bullied at school and I equate that to like graffiti on the walls, you know? And then the drugs and alcohol and the things that I did, it was like infestations in my floors, right? And so when I went to treatment, I started attacking it in the way of restoring my body and my soul as I was, as you would a house. You know, you gut it, you gut it, and you start, you know, you just clear it out and, you know, start adding things back in with discernment. And so that is where the term restoration comes from. And in fact, the first version of this podcast was called The Restoration of Samantha Jones, where I tell that story. And so, you know, we have, before we're born, I believe we as souls, you know, we have this idea of what we're going to come to earth for, right? And we have these, you know, we have our original intent of our time on earth. And what happens to us in the beginning part of our life is part of that. And then the second half, when we figure out, you know, who we do want to be and where we do want to go and how we want to live in alignment with ourselves, that's the restoration, right? Back to the original intent of our time. So, you know, we explore ourselves, we explore the world within us, and then we explore the world with around us too. You know, like what about this world is helping me? What about nature is helping me? What about this person I'm talking to? And so we use all of these things to build a life and a home within ourselves that we can take everywhere.
That's great. Awesome. I love it.
Thank you for asking me such a good question. I remember the first time I was on your show, you asked great questions.
I do my best. You know, I have learned a lot. I've been doing podcasting for a while now. So I think I've gotten better even as a result, unintentionally improving, but I've seen a lot more success through consciously taking steps and being critical, doing things like Toastmasters and doing stand-up comedy and things like that, where they start counting your ums, you know, you watch your tape and you're like, oh my God, that's so bad, it's terrible or whatever. Yeah. And it's painful, but I think pain in the short term leads to more pleasure long term.
Yeah.
And I think it's a pretty fair rule to go
by. Yeah, and to give ourselves some grace, because nobody's going to come, well, not nobody, very few people are going to come right out of the bat and, you know, knowing how to polish their words in real time.
No, you know? Nobody really does do that. You'd be surprised, in fact, how few people are naturally good at speaking. They go through all these different programs. And somebody who gets a bunch of notoriety or press for some reason, immediately they go in to learn how to speak publicly. And it's like a really fast, what do you call that whenever you go through something really quick, like a
fast track?
Yeah, it's kind of like a fast track kind of thing.
Like an incubator.
Yeah, exactly. You'll get a ton of feedback, but it's like really fast, you know. And happens in media pretty often.
Yeah, I feel like that's what my spirit guides did to me the last few years was put me on the fast track. and I learned quickly and I like to learn a lot. So they were like, oh, she's ready, let's go. And they were just like, and I was like, wait a minute. And they're like, nope, too late.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's, I say this analogy all the time, but you got to throw your hat over the fence, you know, especially if you have like an issue with procrastinating, like I'm kind of a natural procrastinator. So it's like, I have to, if I don't book that show, then I'm not going to write for it. Mm-hmm. If I don't, you know, if I don't get on a Zoom call and do my act to my friends for critique, then the stage show will suffer as a result of that. It's like you had a coach for writing, and I haven't done that yet as far as for comedy. When I'm ready to do it, I absolutely will pull the trigger. But I do have friends that I collaborate with who give me some feedback here and there, because you don't really get feedback in the sense of unless you ask for it from other comics. But so many, there's a lot of kind of strange things going on, motivations and stuff like that. But Toastmasters and friends and other people who have done certain things can be such valuable, insightful things. And I encourage anybody to take the criticism, to put themselves in that position of pain, to allow themselves to open up and be vulnerable enough to hear that criticism. If there's one thing that can put you on the fast track, that's what it is. When people go into these media classes and learn how to speak and all of that stuff, it is, they're in the hot seat, and there's people there, there's two or three people there coaching them through, and pushing them to challenge them so that they can get better much more quickly. And that's the only way to improve fast. Otherwise, it's going to take a while. But if you can learn to take criticism and integrate that, then you'll be in the top 10% of whatever it is. Yeah.
I would also like to encourage people to, we don't have to do things fast.
Absolutely agreed.
100%. We don't have to do things fast. We can take all the time in the world that we need. And when we're learning something and creating something, you know, you and I both have talked about the inner child quite a bit, you know, and our inner child, you know, I call it the little boo, right? The little boo inside, like my job is to protect her and serve her and love her. And, you know, when I honor her, things go a lot slower than they do in this outside world that we have created. And going slowly and being present has, and, you know, going slowly, being present and staying grounded, those things have really enriched my experiences on every level, from within my own experience as a person or my experiences with the world around me.
Yeah, I agree. That's another thing to keep in mind. It seems a little bit paradoxical to say that, but both of those things are true. It's like, don't put yourself in a position where you're like, I have to attain this standard by this deadline. No, don't do that. Take the criticism, you know, improve quickly as you can, but just try to enjoy it, because you're never going to be completely satisfied with where you're at. Let's be honest. That's why I said at the beginning, imposter syndrome is a good thing. You know, if without that, people don't continue to improve beyond where they're at. They just stay on a plateau. And that's not it. You know, it's give yourself that patience and that space, but also take the criticism, integrate that, and get better and improve, and do both of those things at the same time. That is a recipe for guaranteed success at whatever it is that you're doing.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Who knew we had so many things in common?
I had a sneaking suspicion.
I did too, obviously. I really did. I was so excited to talk with you today. I was like, he's going to learn so many cool things about me, and I'm going to learn so many cool things about him. I was like, we're going to end up being best friends.
That's awesome. No, I really appreciate it. I love what you're doing. I think it's great. And thanks for having me on your show.
I'm so glad. I'm really glad. And you know what I think I would love to do, if you're open to it, is let's do a group podcast with a couple of different people. Do you ever watch that Soul of Jared podcast?
I don't know it.
Oh, I'm going to send it to you. And anybody who's listening, this is a great podcast. And I will send it to you on Instagram. And this young man, wow, he's phenomenal. He's phenomenal. He is so in tune with his spiritual journey. He's so in tune. And he is fearless. Fearless is the word. He's fearless. He's relentless. He is bold. He's amazing. And I want to sit around like this kid and his friends and just let it rip. And I think that you would be a perfect guest to do that with.
Yeah, I'm down. Hit me up. Shoot me the thing and I'll check it out for sure. Thank you so much,
Samantha. Well, all right. For anybody listening, we have more to come. But thank you so much for joining us on the We Explore to Restore podcast. And as you know, like, share, subscribe, and comment below. And I will link all of Bootsy Greenwood's things at the bottom here so you can find him. If you're in the Atlanta area, you can check him out for his stand-up. You can find him online. And I guess if you have an Airbnb, you can hire him to clean it. But thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you do anything today, find a little space to love yourself a little bit more and give that inner boo a big fat hug, because he or she deserves it. Bye, everybody. Thanks so much.